Okay, with us this morning, Dean Kraft. Dean is the president and CEO of ISE Logistics. It's good to have you with us, Dean. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it, too.
I've had a lot of questions about this over time, and I think I've come to the source who can answer these. Now, I've been around this industry for 40 years, and I can recall conversations about concrete 40 years ago, and it seems to me that a lot of that has not changed. Now, I understand that you wrote your doctoral dissertation. Here's the title of it: The Fallacy of Current Industry Approach to Assessing Concrete Moisture Before Flooring Installation. Talk about that and talk about your point of view at that point with the industry's approach.
Okay. Well, I'm going to address first real quick. You mentioned 40 years, and that actually ties into the doctoral dissertation research as well. First of all, the doctorate was a bucket list item that I just wanted to do. I'd had a master's, I wanted to get a doctorate. And I think the fear of every doctoral dissertation student or doctoral student is that, what am I going to write about? I had been involved in the industry with flooring and trying to address concrete moisture at that time for about 5 years, and it just kind of fell into place. Why don't I write about something that I'm immersed in? So my dissertation is a little bit different thrust. It wasn't the search for trying to build a new mousetrap. What it was the longitudinal study of the research on the issue of concrete moisture going back about 30 or 40 years, sometimes even 50 years. And if you go back, there are articles talking about concrete moisture way back then. So even when there was the cutback adhesive or things like that, there were still concerns over moisture and flooring. Fast forward coming through, there were some very substantive changes in the 90s. The formulas changed, the adhesives changed. What didn't happen, though, at the same time was the installation instructions didn't change as fast. And so all this came to culmination in a 2001 white paper that kind of pointed out five key reasons why the industry went through these massive struggles in the 90s. So part of my research was to delve deep into those five pillars, those five core issues. And what I discovered was that the literature, the published literature, did not support those five things. That then culminated into the requirement to moisture test prior to installing flooring as a precursor, as a quote-unquote estimate prejudging of whether the floor can receive the flooring. The fallacy part comes in is the literature published about those tests themselves. And that's really where the disconnect occurs. And if you want, I can discuss some of those disconnects. And again, I just want to be clear that this was not my opinion. This was industry research, a lot of it from the flooring industry, just looked at from a different perspective.
Yeah. Talk about some of those points, just for the uneducated, like me, so we can understand.
Okay, well, there was a 2001 white paper that really kind of kicked off this massive focus. And we think about 2001, in 2001, it was current. Now it's 20 years ago. And when you think about the design community, a lot of people in the design community for the past 20 years, that's the only story they've been taught. And the pillars are, first of which would be loss of asbestos as an ingredient in flooring. Well, the research shows that asbestos as a component of flooring really stopped in the United States back in the mid-80s. So to say 16 years later, that's what caused these issues, kind of skips over those adhesive changes of the early 90s. Another one was fast-track construction. Now, that's a nuance, but fast-track construction has a very, very specific meaning. It doesn't just mean building faster. What it means is beginning construction before design is complete. So an example, maybe you're building a 3 or 4 story building, the structural elements are done, they break ground, they start building the structure, but maybe the interior finishes aren't yet selected. So that's all that means. But as it comes to, as it relates to concrete drying, the concrete's going to be down for as long as it's going to be down. It doesn't change that. So trying to say that we're building faster is causing these issues doesn't really align with the fundamental other research on concrete drying. A third, and this really set the flooring industry, some people, at odds from the concrete industry. And the comment was, is that the added water to concrete mixes to facilitate the concrete flowing. Well, there are actually three fundamental points that are very specific to that. One, at least with commercial projects, there's no peer-reviewed journal articles in engineering journals research that shows that was ever an endemic situation. Has it occurred? Sure. Will it occur on a commercial project? Most commercial projects have an independent third-party material tester on site working for the owner testing that concrete. If you overwater that concrete, it is almost a linear, relationship. As the extra water gets added, strength goes down. So you can add a little water, but to add enough to cause the concrete to flow easier, you're not going to be able to do. So the comment that this extra water is being added to facilitate placement is not true, nor has it ever been true. There are admixtures that facilitate flow. So from a structural perspective, from a oversight perspective, from a liability perspective, and even from a profit margin, it's the ready mix industry is not going to add water just to allow ease of placement. They're not going to do it, nor have they ever. So that bullet point was never true. Another one, lightweight. Lightweight concrete does take longer to dry. The first building in the United States construction with lightweight goes back to 1928. So it was not the main one of the top five reasons in 2001 why there was flooring issues. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, this is kind of a tricky one. And the bullet point is loss of solvents. Now, in chemistry, water is actually the universal solvent. Now, a lot of people know that in the early 90s, that the flooring industry made a pretty strong shift from the VOC-laden adhesives to water-based. GreenGuard, GreenGuard Plus, great move, and a lot of great glues. So in reality, the flooring industry did not lose solvents. They lost VOCs, completely different. They changed solvents. All I'm getting at is those are the five pillars upon which the drive to require moisture testing was built. But if you fundamentally dig down into and you research back 20 or 30 years, each one of those, they don't really add up to being fundamentally the reasons why the issues of the 90s occurred. So there you go.
So now I've got an individual on here who goes out and looks at problems in the industry. They call him when there's a commercial building and some sort of problem with it. Mostly the problems I hear from him are moisture related, and the adhesive doesn't do its job correctly because moisture is coming up out of the concrete. Is that what you're talking about, or is that some other problem?
That is one source of moisture that can cause an issue. And this also leads into the fallacy of the flooring industry's approach. And the reason being is that when there's an issue in the field post flooring installation, we're going to call this a failure, post-failure analysis. I see you have wood in your floor behind you, and say a flooring inspector comes out, say your flooring is peaking or whatever, or the pictures of the sheet vinyl oozing adhesive or whatever. The current process is to test the slab prior to installing the adhesive. If you look at that test itself, it says the results are only valid for the point in time. Then you spread a water-based adhesive. What test is there on top of that adhesive to make sure the concrete has not absorbed more moisture from the adhesive, therefore changing the moisture profile of the concrete? There isn't one. Then you spread or lay down nearly an impermeable cover. Maybe the wrong trowel size, maybe too much adhesive was used. Maybe a dew point situation occurred because the ridges weren't rolled correctly. Maybe another source of moisture was introduced. What the post-failure analysis all it tells you is now underneath this failed floor is that you have an elevated moisture result. What it does not tell you is the source of the moisture. But universally, the concrete's blamed because the concrete is what is being tested. This leads me to a very associated discussion with ASTM F3191, the porosity substrate absorption test. That test is probably one of the more important tests, I would argue even more so than moisture testing, because it really helps the installer determine what type of adhesive to use or how much adhesive. A lot of adhesives out there will say for a porous substrate, basically use the large notch trowel because some of it's going to soak in. For the non-porous substrate, power trowel, concrete, existing sheet vinyl, maybe put it on with a paint roller. Put a very thin layer because there's no place for that residual excess adhesive to go. If the wrong trowel is used on a non-porous substrate, then it tacks off and there's no touch. The layer of adhesive touching the concrete may still be wet. Put the flooring in, it doesn't cure properly. The adhesive, to say, you know, the path you were going, doesn't do what it's supposed to do because it's not allowed to dry. It is going to look like a quote-unquote concrete moisture-induced flooring failure. In actuality, it was just the wrong spread rate. But this almost laser focus to rush in and do a post-failure analysis moisture test, see that it's high, and then basically almost stop the investigation there, saying, oh, elevated moisture, that's the cause. It doesn't tell you the source.
So then it seems like, and I wanted to ask you about the industry, the fallacy the industry had in looking at this over time. So they were assessing the problem incorrectly in a lot of cases.
My argument would be that there's an old adage that a five-year-old boy with a hammer, everything's a nail. And the paradigm I would offer in support of how the path proceeded, yes, everything looked the same. Whether it was excess of spread rate, whether it was porous, non-porous. Now think about this. The adhesive, Green Guard adhesive program began in 1992. Probably one of the most fundamental and radical shifts in adhesive formulations. VOCs out, water in. ASTM 3191 substrate absorption didn't become an ASTM until 2016, almost a quarter of a century later. Think about that. Most all adhesives, and I use this to support in my argument for the ASTM on the ASTM committee, most all manufacturers said adhesive, the open time and spread mate is subject to substrate porosity or absorption. But my argument was very, very few more manufacturers defined what that was. And so we did a poll. We called all these different manufacturers. We got all kinds of, there was no standardization. So when you think about that, then trickling down to the field, it wasn't being assessed. Dew point is now just now entering in as a requirement for substrate evaluation prior to flooring. All of these can change how that adhesive reacts.
Now, I don't know how long ago it was you did your dissertation. But however long it was, you probably haven't changed your attitude a good deal as to the way the industry is looking at this problem.
Well, the industry hasn't changed how it's looking at the problem. Yeah. And let me give you some other things to further support at least my research and possibly, you know, the conclusions I've drawn. And these are going to come straight from the tests themselves. All right. Well, first of all, both the calcium chloride and the 2170 test clearly state that they're only for the point in time. Well, if anything's a point in time test, it's a static test. Well, the movement of moisture is a dynamic issue. You can't use a static measurement for a dynamic issue. For instance, speed. Speed is distance over time, miles per hour. You have to use velocity to measure it. you can't just use a yardstick because it doesn't give you speed, because you're using, you're losing the element of time to travel that. That's what I'm getting at. So you might be able to instantaneously measure something, but you cannot measure with the right tool. Well, predictive is the word I was looking for earlier. The calcium chloride in the RH test very clearly in the ASTM language. Lawyers like to use the phrase the plain language of the contract. By the plain language of both those ASTMs, they say they're only for the point in time, meaning they're not predictors. But a lot of those who present from the flooring industry give the impression that if you pass the moisture test, that is a clear indicator of future flooring success. That's not correct. Not because I say so. Another document, ACI 302.2, which is the guiding American Concrete Institute document for slabs to receive moisture sensitive flooring, clearly states, and this is going to be a shock for everybody, that there is no relationship between the RH of the concrete and adhesion of resilient flooring. So think about that. If there's no relationship of the RH of the concrete to the adhesion resilient flooring, why are we pretesting the RH of concrete? Carry that forward. Not only is the test point in time, it's only for the exact location of the test. Well, the RH test is about the diameter of a quarter. So the only relationship that would have to some future flooring change or future issue is if that issue manifested just on top of that quarter. If it happens 1 foot away, there's no correlation because you did not test there. And therein lies one of the biggest fallacies. If you don't pretest, that supposedly voids warranties, but you're not pretesting the entire slab. You could say per 1,000 square feet, that basically replicates a cubic yard of concrete 4 inches thick, but that's not what the test says. The test doesn't say that the result is good for that 1,000 square feet. It says only for the exact location. And then lastly, even if you pass the moisture test pre-installation, every flooring manufacturer has exclusions for moisture. So the process itself does not address the liability concerns. So there's more information going on, all from published documents, ASTM, ACI documents, that's why I say that the approach is fallacious, because it doesn't truly help the project address the concerns.
So what is the approach? What is the better way to look at this and to eliminate some of these problems, which I suspect are costly?
Well, the funny thing too about projects, and that's a good point, that's a good, very good question. The funny thing about almost any single construction process, there's almost another linear relationship that the longer you wait to address something, the more expensive it becomes. An example, we'll use flooring. Normally, obviously, the concrete slabs are placed before flooring, not to try to be tongue-in-cheek, but that's the O3 section division, and obviously that comes first. Sometimes it comes many, many months before the flooring. However, the moisture test is embedded in the O9 section, which occurs right before flooring installation. Whatever the concrete's exposed in between, nobody knows. Nobody checks. It could be rained on, dew point, which is another fallacy, because when the specification is written, that all happens way up front. So already embedded in that project specification is the requirement to pass a moisture test based on who knows what the concrete's going to be exposed to over the coming duration, whether it's a week for trenching or whether it's a year and a half for a massive hospital. So the idea that the project may be held up based on weeks or months of unknowns, because ACI also says every re-wetting of the concrete slab starts the drying time over. So it's not date of placement. But the current process is test. If you don't pass, the most recommended option is bead blast, two-part epoxy, self-level. That is perhaps the most expensive way to address. If, however, the design community recognized and accepted that they cannot control what the concrete is going to be exposed to from date of placement to point of install, they could then address it in the specifications and take proactive steps, budget accordingly, either with both time and money. So when it comes time for flooring, there is no delay. There is no time delay. There is no change order. There is no waste of for meetings. The roofing industry is looking at adopting this strategy itself because they are embracing that we can't control what the concrete's exposed to. So they're looking to write in language that basically just assumes elevated moisture in every concrete slab. I would argue, based on other research, that the design community should take the same approach for interior slabs. Again, not because I say so. Another article published in 2012, ACI Magazine, probably from a person that you know very well, clearly states that unless many months of very favorable interior drying conditions are provided, it is unlikely that the concrete will pass the required moisture test. Many months. Projects do not have that. So if you accept that, Structure Magazine in 2013 stated that moisture mitigation will likely be required. Well, if that's the case, why do we keep going through this? Why don't we step back and change the specification so projects can bid and address accordingly, so when it comes time for flooring, it's seamless?
Are you seeing that happen more and more as we go forward?
I would argue, yes, sir. And I would argue that we're not the only one espousing this message, and this is how it's manifesting. More and more 100% RH glues that also act as moisture vapor barriers are coming onto the market. You already see a move that, you know, moving forward and forward, higher and higher and higher RH adhesives. But another individual I know, well respected in his field, very, very large underlayment manufacturer and adhesive manufacturer, you know, he tries to caution people that just because the glue is rated to 99% doesn't mean it will block 99%. It means it can exist, but it may allow it to pass through. And if your flooring backing is not rated to 99%, you've got a problem. If it's not rated to 100%, then there's the exposure to the end user of something happening in relation to moisture. But I think the industry is changing in the a couple ways. And you're seeing it in the application of some of these 100% RH products where they say very clearly, no moisture testing required. They're embracing that. They are putting that as part of their marketing. They're capturing it in their guide specs, where under slab preparation or what have you, if you're going to use one of those products, it'll simply say moisture testing not required, possibly pH testing not required. That is a cost. There's a cost for moisture testing, time and money. So if you take that time and money out and there's effective evaluation of the time, there's a good chance that you mentioned before that these approaches may cost more. I would argue that maybe that's not the case. You have to value the time it takes to do those tests and apply on the back end. So I think I would say yes. I think the change is slow. I think certain products are kind of pushing it, but I do see a move toward that thought process.
Would it be fair to say that for the most part, the specifier, the people writing the specs for these projects, they have it in their grasp to solve many of these problems?
Yes, sir. And this is why. This goes to a whole different angle, and I think some manufacturers, flooring or adhesive manufacturers, grasp this idea. I think some, they hear the word specification, and they're too narrow-minded. They're too entrenched, and they're thinking when they hear the word specification, they're thinking like the ASTM specification on what it means to be cork flooring. When we say specification, we're talking about the project specification, going back to who said the architect, the specifier. The reason why they have it in their power is it It's simply because of the power of that specification. The specification for a project becomes part of the contract between the owner and the general contractor in design, bid, build projects. So what the architect writes becomes legal requirements. So once it leaves, so if that architect just basically downloads a manufacturer's guide spec and drops it in a project, what the AIA 201 contract documents state, the author and their consultant shall be deemed the author. So it does not matter where that spec writer, that project architect gets that language from. Once it becomes an actual project to build that 3 or 4 story building, to build that 1 million square foot hospital, the architect wrote that. And yeah, because they have that power, and because it's becoming contract legal obligations, yes, they do have it. It's just whether or not that they understand the correct path to achieve the desired end result. But yes, they're the ones that have the power.
What's going to happen to make this, I won't say to eliminate this problem, but at least to dramatically reduce it?
I think first and foremost is just consistent education. I think sitting down in an open discussion. I think, the growth of our own company shows that the people that we reach, by and large, were having an effect. I know that some construction managers, especially CM at Risks, they make it a requirement in the general conditions. They're actually putting it in Division I summary of work to use certain steps. Basically, they were like, hey, we did that process of test, weight, mitigate for years. It does not work for us. We're not going to do that anymore. So what would really accelerate it would be a consensus discussion on the current process and basically people leaving their equities at the door and just possibly stepping back and saying, wait a second, is this working? And if it's not, then let's rearrange it.
It would just seem like in my 40 years that, you know, if that's happened a good deal over the last 40 years, it hasn't happened many times.
No, I don't disagree at all. And remember too, you know, companies like ours, there's only a few of our companies like ours. There's only even more, even a greater few that's messaging like we do. You know, you mentioned my doctoral dissertation. I'm the only one that's ever written or even researched it from that perspective. The only one, you know, going against the 40 years of people that you've known and come across and the industry that you've spent a good portion of your career supporting and being involved with, and probably some of the things I said today, you've never heard before. Well, again, it's just me, my mindset, my perspective, my thinking is more process. And in the short order of like, after like, you know, the 30th or 40th presentation, and I ask people if they've ever gone through this process of building the project and then testing and having their floors delayed, I only need to hear that about 15 or 20 times from across the country and say, wait a second. Well, then why do we keep doing it? That's what really kind of triggered me to research the way I did. And I would argue therein lies the proof of my conclusion. If this is still remains one of the biggest pre-installation concerns, and if so much money is being spent on moisture mitigation right before flooring, why? The process is not working because we keep going through that.
Let me ask you about your company, ISC Logic, and the role you play in this and what you guys do.
Yes, sir. The mainstay what we do, every one of our products is actually is actually designed to address what we see as our core approach. And that our core approach is kind of tied up into one of our main presentations, which is specification strategies to eliminate concrete moisture. And when we say eliminate concrete moisture, we mean all aspects. We mean the moisture testing. We mean the meetings involved with the testing not passing. We mean mitigation prior to installing flooring. And we mean future potential flooring failures. Specification strategies goes back to what I was talking about, is to inoculate, to use maybe a bad example in this current environment we're living in, inoculate the project against the issue as opposed to treating it on the back end. Cure it in the project spec. And so that from that point forward, everybody involved in the project knows what's going to happen, whether it's brand new concrete receiving our admixture, whether it's a renovation with resilient flooring, receiving our resilient flooring moisture barrier adhesive, whether it's receiving our one part epoxy, all of these approaches can still be addressed or implemented proactively in the project specification. So all of our products are geared toward that message. Everything we do is geared toward that message. So whether it's presenting to contractors, whether it's presenting to architects, whether it's our packaging, our messaging, it's all kind of wrapped up towards that core message. So that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to basically create products and processes that fulfills, hopefully, changing the industry in a proactive approach.
So in essence, you're a major player in the education business, it would seem.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I've never called myself a salesperson, and it's not trying to be derogatory against salespeople, but my, yes, sir, 100%, my approach, because, and I can use you as an example, Dave, you said in your 40 years that this is, you know, you've heard a lot about this issue. Well, when I go in to present, my fundamental expectation is a lot of people I'm presenting to have the same experience, same exposure, same teachings. So if I'm going to go to you, I just can't sell you the watch. I have to literally, I can't just tell you the time. I have to build the clock for you. I have to deconstruct the problem and reassemble it in the course of an hour, so that when I'm done, you're kind of stepping back and going, well, wait a second. And so my evolution in the past 13 years has not only been my own growth, but has been my growth in trying to re-message in a certain way in a very, very short amount of time to try to help everybody in the room understand or see the problem from a different paradigm. Yeah. I don't just go in and give the exact same presentation that a lot of organizations do on this issue. And in fact, there's a lot of times I've given the presentation, and I look at it as a compliment, that, again, nothing against salespeople, I don't want to look at being derogatory, that it's not until the last 5 minutes people even realize that I'm selling something. And I've had people come up to me and they're like, oh my God, I thought you were a consultant. I had no idea that you were a manufacturer. And I start laughing. I'm like, well, I'm not trying to be disingenuous to say I'm not trying to sell you something, but I don't like to be sold. I'm trying to help you solve a problem. But if I can't help you understand what the true nature of the problem is, none of my products are going to make sense.
Well, I've always felt everybody's a salesman, really. It's just the technique that's different.
Yes, sir. And ours is based on education in a very well-trodden, seemingly well-trodden subject. And so we're coming in and saying, say, okay, yeah, I know you've been taught math that way, but so, and I got an hour to do it in my presentation, and we were pretty successful.
Let me ask you about the various products that your organization offers.
Yes, sir. Well, the main, I won't call it the flagship, the main one is our admixture, MVR 900 moisture vapor reduction admixture. And so that would go right into the concrete normally at the batch plant. And the beauty when we talk about cost, there's no labor, zero labor, because it's introduced mechanically, it's mixed mechanically, it's delivered in the same truck, it's placed, troweled, cured. So there's no labor, which is a huge savings, tremendous savings. Also, from a planning purpose, once the project accepts it, it's just delivered. It's done. Give, let me give you an example on time. We did a project in outside of Columbus, Ohio, 600,000 square foot hospital, big hospital complex. The construction team assessed after it was all said and done that by the simple addition of our admixture, they estimated that it saved them 3 months in the construction process.
Wow.
What is that value to a 600,000 square foot hospital if they really got done 3 months earlier? What is the opportunity cost gain for that hospital complex just under general conditions? I mean, heck, what does a 600,000 square foot hospital make in a day? And so when I say being able to change how things are done, I'm talking radically. We did a 200,000 square foot hospital in Central Florida. And at the pre-slab meeting, so before the concrete was even placed, the flooring contractor had already been identified. So the flooring contractor was at the pre-slab meeting, which is rare. But at that pre-slab meeting, the GC was able to very clearly state this admixture's in the concrete. The architect was there. The architect's contract administrator rep was there. The owner's rep, the concrete guy, the concrete placement guy, me, because it happened to be 15 minutes from my house, and the flooring guy. And the flooring guy's like, basically, why am I here? But because it happened that early, the GC was able to very clearly articulate, this product is going to concrete. This is how it's going to be cured. ISC Logic has already reviewed the curing product. The adhesion is on ISC Logic. There's going to be no moisture testing. Turns to the architect, is that correct? Turns to the CA, is that is correct? Then, because of our particular product has been reviewed and tested by the largest adhesive manufacturer in the United States and is cross-warranted, he then looks at the flooring contractor and he says, further, I've already called and I have personally spoken to the technical director of this adhesive company. So if any flooring product has an issue, we have a backup. So when I say eliminate concrete moisture from the project, that statement all came out in the first 90 seconds from the GC. And so when it came for time for flooring, move straight through. Very so very, very powerful approach. Very powerful.
Very interesting. Let me ask you to sum this up for our various viewers and listeners, which I think probably have, as you mentioned earlier in the conversation, a certain viewpoint, which they've had for some time. And you're really asking people to look at this from a different angle, basically. Sum that up if you can, this whole conversation, if you can, in a nutshell for them.
Well, I would actually ask to, first of all, have an open mind and just step back and just ask themselves, go through step by step and see to themselves, does the process actually result in the fulfillment of what the owner wants on time and within budget? Not about what a particular manufacturer wants for increased revenue or a particular contractor for a change order. I'm talking about from the project perspective. And then take a hard look. A hard look at all these documents and resources that they're referring to, and just ask themselves, have they themselves critically read them? If you do that, I think it'll be kind of shocking when you realize that by the documents themselves do not support the message that's currently being espoused. And so to sum it up is that we evolve in our understanding. We evolve, we grow, we learn. All I'm asking, I guess, is to apply that same, I won't say the word logic because then that's a play on our name, apply that same approach to this problem. If we've been dealing with this problem for so long, and the problem I'm talking about is not a floor failing, I'm talking about not being able to install on time because of elevated moisture reading. If that is such a big issue, and it has been for so long, maybe we're not doing it right. And there are other ways. I guess that's the sum up right there.
I've got you. Dean, it's been a pleasure.
Look at that right there. The problem we see is not being able to install on time.
I've got you. Well, it's been a pleasure, and you've answered a lot of these questions I've had for 40 some odd years, and I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers appreciate it as well. Thanks for sharing all this with us.
Sure thing, Dave. It was an honor. I really appreciate it.
We've been talking with Dean Kraft. He is president and CEO of ISE Logic, and this is Talk Floor TV.